The school board in Buncombe County, North Carolina, will vote tomorrow on whether to change the names of the local high school sports teams. For more than 40 years, the boys' teams at Irwin High have been known as the Warriors, while the girls' teams are called the Squalls. American Indians long have complained about those names, and in the first investigation of its kind, the Justice Department is trying to determine whether the names violate federal civil rights laws. NPR's Adam Hochberg reports from Asheville, North Carolina.
At Irwin High School, less than 1% of the students are Native American, but you wouldn't know it by looking around the campus. A tall totem pole stands near the school's front door, and outside the gymnasium, there's a larger-than-life statue of an Indian holding a tomahawk. Over the years, those symbols have come to define Irwin's identity, and to Mike Anders, an alumnus and former school board member, they represent a long tradition of school spirit.
The Indian, to me, is a sign of strength and greatness, and we just have a great, great pride in what the Indian stands for.
But in the past few years, Irwin's Indian mascot has become a symbol of controversy. Critics say calling student athletes warriors portrays Native Americans as aggressive savages, and they take offense at the name squaws, which many dictionaries define as a vulgar term for Indian women. Native American leaders repeatedly have demanded the school board change Irwin's team names, but board members have been hesitant to do that, so last year a local family filed a complaint with the Justice Department. Pat Merzlach, the mother of five Native American children, says Irwin's mascot creates so much racial hostility at the school that her children are being denied an equal education.
The logos and the symbols is just as much a part of the curriculum as the books. And when you are using another culture, and particularly when people of that race have to be in that school, you're teaching a four-year course in racism.
Merzlach's complaint has prompted the Justice Department to launch its first investigation of Indian team names. If investigators conclude Irwin's symbols are discriminatory, the school system could lose some $8 million in federal funds. Now, the decision facing the school board is whether to fight to keep the mascots or agree to change them. Last week, at a hearing in the school gym, dozens of people took turns arguing for and against the change. 15-year-old student Rebecca Fox called the team names racially offensive.
Besides the point that the name should be changed because of it being the right thing to do, the lawsuit now being faced will cost enough money to buy new textbooks for the whole school.
But other people spoke in reverent terms for their school mascot. They noted that students in a referendum last year overwhelmingly voted to keep the Indian names. And alumnus Jack Clark said the Indian symbols are intended to glorify Native Americans, not insult them.
I was a member of the student government here when this new high school was built, and the students furnished it with Native American art. Our specifications included such keywords as respect, honor, courage. These were hardly derogatory terms.
One speaker accused the Justice Department of using terrorist tactics to intimidate residents of this rural area and force them to give up a tradition that they hold dear. And even among school leaders, there's resentment over what they see as federal interference into a local controversy. Irwin Principal Mal Brown says he used to be in favor of changing the team names, but now that the federal government may force him to do it, he's no longer sure it's a good idea.
It's not that I don't want to change the mascot, because I think the mascot should be changed, but it's beyond that now. It is an issue of an accusation that this high school has a racially hostile environment, that we've been singled out, and that the Justice Department has involved itself in a matter that I don't feel like they should be involved in.
Indeed, legal scholars say the Justice Department's involvement in the Irwin controversy sets a new precedent. The dean of the University of Denver Law School, Nell Jessup Newton, has followed Indian mascot disputes for several years, but says until now they've all been handled locally by school boards and superintendents. Newton says the decision by federal investigators to look into the Irwin complaint lends new legal credibility to Native Americans' long-standing concerns.
Whether they win or not, the fact that they've entered has been taken as very heartening by a lot of folks. So I think it is very path-breaking, and it might open the doors to more activities and encourage more schools voluntarily to stop using these names.
Newton says some 600 colleges and high schools already have eliminated Native American team names, including the public school systems in Dallas and Los Angeles. She predicts all Indian sports mascots eventually will disappear, but not without more controversy. She says in some communities that have changed their team's official name, certain fans still insist on waving banners and reciting cheers that honor the school's old Indian tradition. Adam Hochberg, NPR News, Asheville, North Carolina.
The Major League Baseball season opens a month from tomorrow with the New York Yankees heavily favored to defend their World Series title. Commentator Frank DeFord says the past year was not as kind to Yankee legend Joe DiMaggio.
It was really quite extraordinary, wasn't it? How much attention was paid to the old man as he lay dying a few months ago. As if he were some great head of state, bulletins were issued regularly as he came in and out of coma, on and off life support, as the priests and the relatives arrived to bid him goodbye. Blessedly, he's out of the hospital now, but especially as we look ahead to a new baseball season, his close call still begs the question, why does Joe DiMaggio merit so much of our regard? Why do we care so? Oh, no doubt he was a superb ball player, one of the best, but just in his own era, the experts ranked Ted Williams before him. No, great a talent as he was, DiMaggio is more cultural a figure than he is merely athletic. We can still see young Mr. DiMaggio in one of his rich, sleek suits with a cigarette and a martini at a supper club, just as well as we remember the Yankee Clipper in his pinstripes elegantly patrolling the great green expanse of Yankee Stadium. The Yankee Clipper, not a nickname, oh God, no, more a title. DiMaggio was the Yankee in those last years when the Bronx Bombers absolutely ruled baseball and when baseball was still undisputed, the national pastime. Ironically, while Paul Simon used DiMaggio's name as an afterthought, simply because it scanned so much better for his song lyric than did Mickey Mantle, Simon stumbled onto the truth. DiMaggio was the symbol of an era. Mantle wasn't. Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? Ask, where has the past gone? Where have we gone? But curiously, DiMaggio's been forgotten for what matters most in his legend, that he was a significant ethnic figure, the first great American star of Italian heritage. 25,000 Italian-Americans came out to Yankee Stadium that day in 1936 when DiMaggio debuted. Maybe because DiMaggio was a high school dropout, originally called simply Dago by his teammates, maybe for that he was always insecure in the larger world, so retiring and distant, mysterious even. And maybe because Italians in America are no longer systematically discriminated against as they were then, it's easy to forget what DiMaggio endured and how he mattered most under pressure. But long ago we stopped asking, where have you come from, Joe DiMaggio? And that's good. Finally, too, I think it counted less that he married Marilyn Monroe than that their marriage didn't last. The most beautiful movie star in the world and the most graceful athlete, the perfect physical union for our age, best since Venus and Adonis, but even they couldn't make it work. We, as imperfect human beings, took some naturally mean-spirited comfort that even gods and goddesses can fail, too. It is the tragedy of the hero that yet enthralls us as much as the glamour ever did.
The comments of Frank DeFord, a senior contributing writer at Sports Illustrated. He joins us each Wednesday from member station WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut.